Welcome to the show. This is the Cult of Conspiracy, and my name's Jonathan.
I'm Jacob.
And today we have a very special guest. You know, anybody can talk about any 9/11 conspiracies, but today we have Mr. David Seeloff. How you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. Yeah, we had some technical difficulties, but we've figured out a way to magician this thing straight up. I don't know how it worked, but we're doing it.
We're making it happen.
So, Dave, I mean, I was brought to you. Somebody actually sent me a link to your website, and you know, I'm all about information that goes against what is mainstream. And I mean, from what I read, you're absolutely about that. Is there could you give us maybe a little bit of insight as far as
your background, what stake in the game you may have into this whole conspiracy, how you got started in this, just a little bit of backstory about you?
Sure. I've been interested in conspiracies way back when I was a kid, with Adamski regarding UFOs, Velikovsky regarding alternative history. Mm-hmm. But then I, didn't become religious until I reached college, and then I started getting into other things. I went to Fuller Theological Seminary after I graduated college, about 15 years after, and I got a two-year degree. But I worked there in the word processing department for 9 years total, and I was working for the professors, and I got to ask them a lot of questions, and they would answer me because they wanted their stuff. Right. And they were relaxed, and it was after hours and stuff. So that was a wonderful experience. But from 1974, I had been following a gentleman by the name of Ernest L. Martin. He ran the Foundation for Biblical Research in Pasadena, California. Mm. He wrote a number of books, and the first book that he wrote was dealt with the Star of Bethlehem. Today it's called The Star That Astonished the World. Last edition was in 1996. And that was the fourth edition, really. And he worked closely with Griffith Planetarium in Los Angeles for about 15 years. He'd want to test and see something, how it looked on the Zeiss computer on the planetarium. And they would set it up for him because, as one of the program directors of Griffith said in a public meeting that I attended, we get a lot of crazy people coming in with a lot of crazy ideas, you know, like, well, the reason it was dark at Jesus' death was because of a solar eclipse. Well, you can't have a solar eclipse at Passover. It's right. Physically impossible.
Right.
The moon is elsewhere. And, you know, but this thing was different. And what it turned out was Dr. Martin in Pasadena came up with some biblical information that showed that Jesus was born in the year 2 BC or 3 BC. Later on, he was able to narrow that down. Now, this all involves the date of Herod's death, but yep. He's worked out all those historical details also. So what we have here is Dr. Martin, his last situation, his last work on this in 96, determined, and the reason he kept that four editions also was because he had updated information, not just from the astronomers and his own research, but from experts, historical and theologians, who, you know, kept giving him hints and new information and arguing with him and everything else. This is the academic process.
Right.
So what he came up with was Jesus was born on September 11, 3 B.C., on the Day of Trumpets, which is a fall feast day, the first one of the, you know,
of the Jewish feast holidays, right, the big harvest, yeah.
Right, right. And this was a significant date, and I'll get to the verse in Revelation that puts a time stamp on it, just like when you check out, if you've ever worked in a factory, mm-hmm. This is the same thing. This was the setup of the astronomical thing when Jesus, of the planets and the sun and the moon, at the moment of Jesus' birth. Now, the astronomers didn't like that. As a matter of fact, when he first came out with his first book in the 1970s, they were picketing the planetarium and the observatory because people didn't like this story. The Jewish community had a number of people who picketed it, and Griffith Planetarium, they kind of backed off. So even though they let him come with his new information, they were not able to promote it. However, the program director, he sent out, he made available new planetarium shows, and at one time, 600 planetariums had changed their show at the holidays, Christmas show, from Kepler, the astronomer from the 1600s, Kepler, Johannes Kepler, to Dr. Martin's scenario. And now a lot of them have gone secular. Griffith doesn't show Martin's scenario anymore. And the only one that I know of, the only largest planetarium who shows it at Christmas is Adler Planetarium in Chicago. If you know anyone, then it lives in the Chicago area, then if they want to see it, they can go there. And they give him, they used to give him some credit. And this was straight from the guy who designed this planetarium program. It's programmed just like a computer.
Gotcha.
So this is the situation, background and history of this date, September 11th, 3 BC.
Mm-hmm.
Originally he had 2 BC or 3 BC, but then he narrowed down Herod's death, and then he also was able to nail down this particular verse in the book of Revelation.
Okay.
And it comes out, bingo, exactly what it does give a precise situation. Because when they plugged it in, it came out to September 11, 3 BC, and then Dr. Martin, who was a meteorologist and was familiar with calendars and sightings and all this kind of stuff and the mathematics involved. So he was up to track with the astronomers.
Right.
So that's the background.
Okay.
Now the main question today is there a relationship between September 11, 3 BC and September 11, 2001? Dr. Martin died in January of 2002. Just a few months after September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
But he did write a short article, it's about 4 pages, 3.5 pages, on the internet called Afghanistan versus Gog and Magog, close parenthesis. You just did a show.
We actually just did a show on Gog and Magog. And I touched on it briefly. I would have liked to have dove into it more. But I just was not firing on all cylinders that night. That was on me. I had just come off a very long night shift, and I was running on fumes, you know. But
let me read a short paragraph about what the second paragraph in the article.
Please do.
Of what he said. Why is it the peoples of Afghanistan do not adhere to democratic institutions? Because throughout their history, the peoples inhabiting those geographical regions have such an unusual desire for sheer independence from other nearby families, other nearby tribes, or other nearby groups trying to tell them what to do, that the natives are at constant war with their neighbors. In other words, they don't like being told what to do. Most of the people do not live in cities, and their lineage is normally to kinship alliances and ethnic societies, local families, and regional ones, and also in religious beliefs that they express in a variety of traditions and customs. In history, their populations have normally been fighting one another in all local areas. The region has to be acknowledged as one of the most uncontrollable and wild regions in the world, and there is no exception to what is happening there, even at the present time when the United States and Britain are bombing the areas. In a word, and what he says is, we should get in, we should get out.
That's,
he said this in November 2011. I didn't believe it, and I have since written that I thought progress was being made, as you've heard our military say.
Well, you can never believe what they tell us. You know what I mean? I actually was in the military during that time, and I'm telling you now, we made progress, quote unquote, but we were also under the impression that we were there to nation build. That is not why we went to Afghanistan, because that group, like you said, they don't want to have a nation. They're more focused on their clan, their tribe, their family, their village. And that's all they're worried about.
And now it looks like it's going to be China's turn.
Yeah, but I think
China will kill them all.
Right, but I don't believe China's going to come in and actually try to overtake them. I think China's going to come in and do business with them. They're not going to work against them. They're going to try to work with them.
Plus the poppy fields.
The poppy fields. We did a whole episode on this.
We never hear about that.
The poppy fields and the $3 trillion of untapped mineral reserves in Afghanistan's mountains that we can never get to because there's no infrastructure, there's no roads, there's no railways to be able to get the minerals out. But China just signed a deal with Pakistan, and they're about to sign a deal with Afghanistan to mine, pretty much strip mine all of Afghanistan's mountains. So.
Yeah, I don't think the people will like that.
No, they won't.
Were you over there?
No, sir. I stayed stateside. I wanted to deploy. That's actually one of my biggest life regrets. Is that I never deployed, but I was in the military during that time, and I was in the infantry, so. But, anyway, so.
David, let me ask you, man, as far as, you know, whenever we, so the Twin Towers go down, 9/11, they blame it on Afghanistan, or they blame it on Iraq, you know, Osama bin Laden, right, and all that stuff. If you're saying, I mean, is this a coincidence that Jesus was born on the same day of the most, I mean, something that nobody will ever forget, that will always live on it's already the biggest conspiracy probably ever. And a lot of people do believe that it was an inside job. I mean, there's so many people that are going on and they're saying that, oh, you know, Donald Rumsfeld, he was pretty much head of the State Department, or head of the Treasury Department, and September 10th, 2001, he come out and said, oh, well, there's $3.2 trillion missing out of the Treasury, and it just so happens, whenever, you know, the planes go ahead, and they hit the Twin Towers, and then they hit the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, right, and so, it's just all, I mean, they want us to believe that this is all a giant coincidence. I'm of the idea that it was some kind of ritual, because a lot of these people are really big into numerology. What's the other one? Just a lot to do with numbers. If you look into a lot of these things.
Gematria,
yeah. Exactly what I was thinking of. And they're big on the numbers 9 and 11. I mean, we just saw the plane that was, you know, supposedly one of the planes that we left over there, and the number that was on the plane was 1109. And so, you know, there's a lot of weird things with these numbers. Maybe it's gematria, maybe it's some kind of spiritual warfare. I mean, what do you think, how does all this line up, or is it just all a coincidence that it just so happens to be Jesus' birthday?
Well, let me give you a few more. I saw it live, the first broadcast was the breakoff series from X-Files, was The Lone Gunman.
I've heard of it, I don't think I've ever seen it.
Yeah, I think the very first episode was a double episode about a remote control plane being flown into the Twin Towers.
I've heard about that. They also did a movie where Samuel L. Jackson, there was a plane or a bomb that was going to go off in the Twin Towers, and the guy literally was verbatim breaking down how this would go out. Like, Hollywood gave us all the clues beforehand.
That's all I'm saying. That's what leads me to believe that it was all some kind of ritual. Like, if it wasn't a ritual, it was certainly all planned. Because you look at the structure of that of those buildings, of those towers, they were steel framed on the outside.
Yeah.
I mean, you see what happens to the nose of a plane if a pigeon hits it, and we're supposed to believe that the nose of a plane goes through an entire steel structured building. Get out of here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I was listening on, I think it was CNN, at the time on that day, September 11, when the owner of those buildings comes on and they're showing the collapse of Building 3. And he said, oh, they took it down.
Oh, Building 7. Yeah.
That they were going to take it down.
Right. And they made the decision to pull it. It didn't get hit by a plane.
Yeah.
It didn't get hit by anything, but somehow the building fell
right on
its own. And nobody, and that's always been my big thing. Let's say that I was a huge skeptic, and I believed that Al-Qaeda did it, the planes hit the buildings, and the Pentagon, and I believe the story the news has given us 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can explain Building 7.
Nobody.
That even if all other things were correct, there's a conspiracy around that alone,
right,
which tells you that you got to start peeling back the layers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I said Building 3, but Building 7 is right. And yeah, nobody ever addresses it. And I'm wondering, why haven't they found the plane crashed in Pennsylvania. There was all sorts of parts. Where are all the plane parts on the plane that hit the Pentagon? The wheels do not melt.
No.
The wheels don't melt. Crashed. The turbine off of that plane, that was a Rolls-Royce engine. Rolls-Royce came
made
and said,
for heat.
Right. And they said, that is not our components. They have admitted that that is not their plane parts. Plus, not to mention, I've been to the Pentagon more times than I can count. When I was in the Marines, I was stationed in Washington, D.C., and I worked in and out of the Pentagon a lot. The amount of cameras that are on that building, inside and outside, is absurd. There is no way that a whole section of that Pentagon's cameras went out at the same time. They have redundancy systems in place to prevent that from happening for national security, especially on that morning. There is no way, no possible way that the computer glitched in that perfect scenario and that happened. I refuse to believe this.
Well, it's the same scenario with Jeffrey Epstein and the cameras going out with that. So,
but that was one camera. We're talking about literally like 1,000 cameras per side.
Right.
You know
what
I mean?
You know, it's just all it's all so sketchy.
And those cameras at the Pentagon are backed up with instant power.
Uh-huh.
If the main power goes out.
They have to.
You know, at the prison, I don't know if it would be that way.
Right. People think it's like the Bourne Ultimatum, where you cut one wire and all the cameras go out. That is not the way it's rigged up. I'm sorry. I'm an electrician. I can tell you it is not the way it's rigged up.
You know, they say that the truth is really in the rubble. You know, everything that came down from the Twin Towers, they went and got it all checked out, sent some of the rubble to labs. And they found that there was actually thermite powder, a bunch of all these things that fell from the towers. And let's not forget, they couldn't find any of the dead bodies, you know, from any of the passengers that flew into the airplane. But just a couple blocks down the road, they were able to find a passport.
They found the passport of one of the terrorists that hit the plane. And everybody just agreed, oh, they found it on the ground of all places. Like,
right.
No one's questioning this.
Nobody. Right.
And for the record, for all of our listeners out there, please do not misinterpret us.
Please don't look into all these details, you know.
Yeah. But for our listeners out there, please don't think that this is in any way us going anti firefighters or police officers or first responders or military that have lost their lives or had any issues based off of that day. This podcast is very pro military, pro public servants. But at the same time, we also want to expose the truth and expose the fact that shouldn't have happened in the first place. So, for our listeners, please don't think that we are bashing any of these people. We are trying to help bring to light the truth.
How this, real good.
Yeah.
How this connects, I wouldn't put it past the evils people, the occultists and all that stuff to work
absolutely all
this stuff out. But I would question somewhat why they would want to draw attention to September 11, 3 BC, the true date of Christ's birth, which I believe now. And by the way, it never says we're supposed to celebrate it, but that's a different issue.
Right.
But who knows? They do weird things.
Absolutely.
And they do horrific things. Mm. So, and I could get into some of that stuff too.
Hey man, go down any rabbit hole you want. We like to get a little off track over here too, so it's all good.
Well, let's Gog and Magog.
Yes, the Ezekiel 38 and 39 war that is happening.
There might be two instances of Gog and Magog a lot of prophecies are dual, and some are actually triple.
Yeah.
Like John the Baptist, you know. So, you know, Elijah, the original Elijah, Elijah to come. Jesus said it was John the Baptist. Then he said, but there's going to be another one.
Right.
So that's a triple. Gog and Magog might be a double. It might be a triple, but likely that's a double. Before and after, as I see it, Christ returns. At the end of the millennium, they're going to rebel against Christ. And, you know, you're thinking, what are they thinking? What do they think they're doing? It doesn't make any sense.
I think we're about there now, actually.
There might be another war that's coming before Gog and Magog, before Christ returns. And that's written on the first 8 chapters of Zechariah. Check that out. And that will definitely prove to the world that God intervenes for his people Israel.
I think
and
that
when that happens, yeah, there could be no doubt that God exists and that he's now going to be active and interactive. And then there will be a time of great prosperity in which I believe the gospel will be preached. Most people will, quote, accept it, and then they'll reject it.
Right.
Because in good times, that's where Satan's most effective. If you oppress people, evil prospers less, but for the faith of many is increased.
Indeed.
So that's my point of view.
Honestly,
on that kind of stuff.
When you look at Israel in the Six-Day War, oh, that alone should tell you that God is with that group. There's no way that a bunch of Holocaust survivors who just got this land, have no military backing, have nothing. They are from the ground up trying to start a country. There's no conceivable way that they should be able to fight off standing armies with tanks and air force and all these things that have been fighting for forever. There's no possible way they should have won that. And not only did they win, they got so far that the UN had to ask them to give Egypt back. You know what I mean? Like, that should not have happened. Mathematically, that shouldn't have happened. So, I definitely am with you. I think there's going to be another war against Israel. Maybe it'll be the Gog and Magog. I am going to check out the Zechariah war you're speaking of. I'm going to check that out as soon as this podcast is over, as a matter of fact. But when we're talking about Afghanistan itself and why 9/11 was so important to get us into Afghanistan, you're right. That area cannot be controlled. Alexander the Great, all the way to us, has failed at trying to... Because the only thing that rolls in that country is either iron-fisted dictatorship or completely let them have free reign. That's the only two options you have. They do not want democracy. They do not want republic. They do not want civil liberties. That's not what they respond to in that area. And that's a part of their upbringing. That's a part of their culture.
But, you know, as the military... industrial complex, they wanted to rise up the military leaders.
Well, that's because America only does one thing really well anymore. You know what I mean? We don't have the big production that we had after World War II. We don't have the big engineering marvels that we once had. That's in Dubai. The only thing America is really, really good at is war. And the only way that we can keep doing it is to make boogeymen and to go fight them. So... that's why we created Al-Qaeda. That's why we created the Taliban. That's why we created the Mujahideen. And that's why we created ISIS. And that's why we have left them in that area well-equipped so that somebody, probably us, is going to have to go back over there in a couple years, maybe a decade or two, and go back and fight with some other military operation trying to spread that freedom. Because that's just what America does. And it's sad that...
Well, one of the things I'm... Go ahead. One of the things I'm worried about is that the United States' power will have to be diminished in order for Israel to be threatened, unless we have somebody who won't back Israel, which is possible.
I think we have that right now. So in all of the prophecies of people descending onto Jerusalem and onto Israel, it says that no one's going to come to their aid. I can't think of a world where America would not aid Israel except for either A, like you said, our power is so diminished that we can't help them, or B, we have people in charge that refuse to help them. And I think we currently have that in our administration.
Possibly both. I mean, yeah. You know, there's actually a lot of service members right now that were, you know, they were told, you know, with Biden coming out and saying that everybody needs to get the vaccine for companies that have 100 plus employees. There is actually, a lot of these military people just straight up walked off. They were given the opportunity. They could be court-martialed or whatever, and they just absolutely walked off. There's thousands of
they can make a lot more money on the outside.
Oh my god! Absolutely, doing the exact same job they were doing, they can make three times the money by simply putting out a resume. I mean, yeah. And it depends on the MOS. Granted, like me being in the infantry, all I could really do was either private military contracting or be a cop. Granted. But at the same time, you know, with the GI Bill, you go to school and you make something of yourself, which here we are.
So,
well, you're making the big money on the podcast, right?
Trying.
One day, hopefully.
For the record, anybody listening right now, go hit that like and subscribe button. Go ahead and share our content. Help us grow this. Help us grow.
And as a matter of fact, go to the Apple Podcast and Spotify. Give us 5 stars on everything. That really helps boost the algorithm and pump this information out there. We're trying to open up that third eye across the world, baby.
Always.
So David, I would like to ask you, man. I mean, you find out that Jesus was born, you know, September 11th. Would you say in the year 2 or 3 BC?
3 BC. That was Dr. Martin's last bit of research. And actually, he got that in 1980, but put it in his 88 edition or 89 edition, and then the 96 edition. And he feels it's confirmed. Now, other people disagree, of course, because primarily they disagree over... the death of King Herod. Ordinarily, it's 5 BC. Well, obviously, Herod had to be alive when Jesus was born. So if Jesus was born in 3 BC, Herod died in 2 BC. And the wise men came 18 months after Jesus was born.
Yeah, a lot of people think they were there that night for some reason.
Right. No, not... No, they were not there the same night as the shepherds.
Right.
Absolutely not. And the wise men never saw any angels. But this actually happened in the celestial realm. There was a terrific merging of Venus and Jupiter, and it was a single star. And Dr. Martin said, and so did the planetarium guy that I spoke with, he said when the astronomers saw that, it was off the scale in magnitude. Mm-hmm. It was a single bright light, and it did descend when the wise men would have been at the birth of Christ. It would have been there. And these guys could figure all this stuff out, but it took them a year and a half to get there. They probably had to decide and work out the relationships and everything. Herod didn't know they were coming,
right.
But they came with a big group of people.
Yeah, they came with a whole entourage.
And we don't really know how many there were, so it's a very interesting situation.
Indeed.
But that star, again, this Jupiter, did go over Bethlehem while the wise men were there.
Yeah.
In a year and a half later, Herod was still alive then. And then Herod died, and then they could go back to... And Dr. Martin covers the census and everything. He's the census was actually it was a major census to see how many people were in the empire, like King David did in the Old Testament.
Right.
Except this, the Gentiles doing it, so nobody cared.
Right.
And they all obeyed. So everybody had to go back to their time. And it was done during the feast days, because people were likely to be in Israel, those who lived in that area,
right,
during those periods. So in the fall feasts. So everything works out. And Let me read Revelation 12 in verse 1.
Okay.
And this is with a time stamp that I mentioned before. And there appeared a great wonder. The word is sign. Literally, a sign points to something. A great wonder in heaven. A woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. Now, that actually occurred. You go to any planetarium show or any planetarium program and type in September 11, 3 BC, and this is what you see. 12 stars are identifiable. The moon is under her feet. And we had something similar, but not exact, in last December. I don't remember what day it was in December.
December 21st.
Remember everybody said,
yeah, it was
the 21st.
Yeah, December 21st with the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn.
Yep.
Right. But that was different. It was not exactly what's described in Revelation 12.
Right, right.
And then at verse 2 says, and she being with child cried, travailing in birth, and pain to be delivered. Then the next verse is also very interesting. Verse 3, and there appeared another wonder in heaven. And behold, a great dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon its head. Now, I want to focus on the word wonder is the same word as in verse 1. But the word another, there are two kinds of word another in Greek. There's another of a different kind and another of the same kind. This is another of the same kind. No one has been able to identify this other wonder in heaven. It doesn't. Dr. Martin couldn't find it. The astronomers couldn't find it. We have a guy who's working on it. His name is Gary, and he's looking for it, and has been for decades, a long time.
Yeah.
And he's into this kind of stuff. He's got like quite a few planetarium programs.
Wow!
And he's looked into this indeed. He's looking for other things because there's I think it's Revelation chapter 15, and it talks about another sign, and it's another sign of the same kind. There's 3 in the book of Revelation, and we don't know what those other 2 are. The last one in 15 is probably occurring in our time, but this one in 12 verse 3, don't know what that means, but it appears to be another sign in heaven, and the other sign in verse 15 is also in heaven.
Right.
So if the first one was something to be identified and plays out, what about the other 2? We don't know. Do the occultists know? Not that I know of. I've never heard anyone talk about any of this stuff.
Right.
Although I don't, I'm always amazed. I think I'm knowledgeable about stuff, and somebody comes out I've never heard of before, and wow, that just fits.
I mean, do you have any guesses as to what it could be? I mean, are we talking about something else that was occurring in the sky? Is it another planet? What could it possibly be? Have you heard any suggestions?
No, I don't know.
That's the problem with the Book of Revelation. It's so open to interpretation. It's so vague because at the time, you have to understand, God was giving John the Revelator a vision to put onto paper, but the problem was he could only go off of the imagination of John the Revelator.
Mm.
And keep in mind, that was wrote how long ago? You know what I'm saying? Like, back, for instance, when they talk about in the end times that the prophets in Israel will be killed and the entire world will see it in an hour. No one knew what that meant. We thought that we'd be able to see it in the sky. Well, now we have satellite phones. You know what I'm saying? Back then,
exactly.
how do you word that to a wise man circa 100 AD?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It could not have happened until now.
It couldn't have happened.
It could not have happened until our time.
Exactly.
Even, in the 90s, it couldn't have happened.
Right.
Just a few people.
Desert Storm, I think, was the first war where we had actual satellite communication with people around the globe for this purpose. So my point is, though, that it had to happen in the order in which it happens. And when you look at the Book of Revelations and you look at books that are meant to be prophetic, you have to look at it with a whole different lens on because you're going off of whatever that particular writer could imagine that God was trying to tell him to put down in the best way he could at that time.
Right.
Right.
And there's another interesting factor about the book of Revelation. There's a term called intertextuality. In other words, one book is pulling information from another. Sometimes right. it's a translation. Sometimes it's a few words, and that's all the audience needed to know. Because everything in ancient times was spoken, was written to be spoken.
Right.
And to be read aloud. Okay? And the audience would catch, would know the clues, especially the Israelites in Israel.
Mm.
So they all knew the punchline, sort of.
Right.
The book of Revelation has more intertextuality than any book in Scripture. Any. It's pulling from Daniel. It's pulling from Ezekiel. It's pulling from Isaiah. And my goodness, we don't have the connections. But I will say this. It will be the Jewish people who convert to Christianity, in my view, that will be able to put all this stuff together.
Which is actually on the rise. Messianic Jews, I think is what it's actually called, their version of Judaism that believes that Jesus Christ was the Son of God, is on the rise in Israel, now more than ever.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that gets suppressed. I have a number of people who I've spoken with who were Gentiles and had ministries over there, been there for decades,
mm-hmm.
and they've been booted out.
Yeah.
And soon, if you were born Jewish and moved to Israel and were converted, that was not a problem. But now, I don't know. I know a friend of mine who produced and directed and created our video on his video on the precise location of the temple. Based on Dr. Martin's research, he cannot do Aliyah over there.
Really?
He cannot move to Israel and live there and retire there.
Wow.
Because he's a Jew, but he converted to Israel. And there is no way that I know of that he can become a Jewish citizen, an Israeli citizen.
Wow.
And it's very interesting. So, but I personally believe that all these details,
mm-hmm.
and I could give you names of a book, a set of commentaries that, I don't know if you're going to be able to put text below the link of this podcast.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Suggested books, some of ours and this other one. He puts side by side, he puts the Old Testament scriptures, and then he puts the New Testament scriptures. He's got commentary on Daniel, commentary on Revelation, commentary on Matthew, and a commentary on Hebrews. He's did his postgraduate work at Hebrew Union in Ohio.
Wow.
And he was their top student. He was a Gentile. They liked him, but they didn't like him.
Right, right. But I honestly think that 9/11 was the catalyst to make all this happen. You know what I mean? History has to play out a certain way. The prophecy has to be fulfilled. And 9/11, being an inside job that our government put on, in cahoots with all the other governments, because the World Trade Center going down, it affected the whole world's economy, not just us.
Right.
I believe that had to happen to get U.S. forces over there to where we would pull out, to where now Israel will be on their own, so that these prophecies can be fulfilled. I think that it had to play out in this way. And in the back burner of all of that, Dick Cheney made so much money off of Halliburton in the military contracts. We got so much good deals on the oil from Iraq until, well, we lost that. But my point is, though, the industrial complex was fed while the prophecy was being fulfilled, all at the same time.
How much were they charging the government for manufacturing Pepsi-Cola bottles?
Oh, man, I remember this.
I heard $10 or something, but it wasn't more.
Right. It was something. Yeah. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And that's the way it was with everything. But somehow it still always went to the lowest bidder. which blows my mind. They're throwing money away, but they're throwing away to the lowest bidder because they're saving your tax dollars. Like, yeah, sorry. You can't have it both ways.
It's funny how they're always saving our tax dollars, but our taxes are going up every year.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, my dad works over in California. He just filled up his gas tank, $6.48 a gallon right now.
Oh.
Wow. Yeah. What part of the California?
Yeah. Long Beach.
Oh, bro.
Really?
Yep.
They make it down there.
Yeah.
They have a refinery and everything there.
Yeah.
They have wells and refineries.
Oh, yeah. It's all the taxes.
The supply chain isn't that great, you know?
Yeah, it's all the taxes. You know, California, they're so woke over there that they got to tax everybody for everything and then triple tax and quadruple tax and everything. Yeah. And, you know, just to buy a pack of cigarettes out there is like $12.
They need to handle their homeless problem before they worry about taxing everybody else. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's their version of democracy. You know, they wanted to create the Republic of California because, you know, the rest of the country just didn't tax everybody enough. You know, they're so concerned about giving money and spreading the wealth and all that. Meanwhile, you got Gavin Newsom over there. He's basically a puppet. He was put into place. I mean, everything. You go to the riots last year. Oh, it's mostly peaceful riots. He's talking about burning down cities.
Meanwhile, and hunting cops. It's mostly peaceful.
Meanwhile, he's standing in front of a burning building. He's saying that. I'm just like, what is going on?
I live in Portland area, Portland, Oregon area.
Oh, so man,
well familiar with that kind of stuff, but we're far away.
Yeah.
About 11 miles, and very interesting. It's like a different world. We don't go downtown anymore. We go to the airport with a roundabout way if I ever need to travel, which I'm not traveling much anymore.
Right.
But can't go to Israel again. I'd love to. I want to talk to the Sephardic Jewish Christians and the Ashkenaz Jewish Christians and take a bunch of people over there too.
So I'm part of a group that actually makes a pilgrimage to Jerusalem once every 2 years. And I would actually love to see how this is going to play out as far as that's concerned, because we haven't missed a pilgrimage in years. I still want to go. It's expensive, and I just can't afford to take time off of work to that level. It's like 3 weeks. But we support a lot of hospitals and charities for Christians living in Jerusalem. We go to all the sites, the sepulcher, the all the stuff. And I would love to go make that happen one of these days, but especially with the way the world is now, I don't even know if that's going to be able to happen.
No, it won't be. There's too many variables, you know. Right. Have you had the latest booster? Have you had the vaccine? Which one? You know, and constant testing. I don't want things way up in my nose.
Absolutely not.
They have saliva tests now, but those are expensive. $100 or something. I don't know. It's a crazy, crazy world. And
the amount of tyranny that goes on these days is just, it's so crazy that so many people just go along with it. You know what I mean? So many people are just stepping in line and following, you know, their shepherd. You know what I mean? And it's just so... it's just so unfortunate. This is really why we have the podcast. It's kind of just to give a different narrative than what's being broadcasted on the news and what's being broadcasted all over the radio. I mean, I can't listen to a radio station without every other commercial trying to make me feel bad that I don't have the vaccine. You know what I mean? I mean, so it's just nonstop, constant barrage. It's just to make you feel guilty, or if you don't want to do it for you, do it for other people. That's not how it works.
I'm also worried that, like, all right, so you look at 9/11, and that was one of two times in America's history where we are all in solidarity for a cause, right?
Right.
And
right.
It's horrible that it takes disaster to bring people together in that manner, but Pearl Harbor and 9/11, those two times, all America was on the same page of action needs to be taken, right?
Right.
What I'm most afraid of, because that's a double-edged sword, okay? Solidarity can work to get people united for a good cause, but it can also get people united for a negative cause. Yeah. And I'm worried that there's going to be some sort of drastic event that's going to make everybody on the same page to do something really bad or really stupid or really careless.
Well, they're putting the fences around the Capitol again.
Yep.
As we speak. And what's going on with Australia? You know, they passed a law years ago, turn in your guns. And yep. They did it. I wouldn't be surprised if they have a view, I don't think they'll get away with it, that they want to turn that into a world prison, Australia.
Well, that's how it started out, with a British prison.
That's how it started, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So who knows? That's in the minds of the evil ones, evil Indeed. People. But I don't think they'll get away with it. I actually think much of this is going to go away. Because you have to have peace and prosperity for the final end time gospel to be preached, as mm-hmm. I see it. And then the people will say, okay, good times are here, and it'll be the 1920s, and they'll just reject it all. And then God will judge the world, and then the Antichrist, he'll allow a deception.
Right.
Then the Antichrist will come. But I don't see that happening till the end of the century.
As far as I've looked at, as far as prophecies that have to come true for the end times, there's a lot of prophecies that can come true, the nothing that necessarily has to come true, except for the temple has to be rebuilt.
Right.
And at that point, all the Antichrist has to do is come in and commit the act of defamation, and that's pretty much it. People don't understand, the rapture doesn't have to happen before that. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like people know bits and pieces of prophecies, but they don't necessarily understand the order of which things are supposed to happen or what they have to happen in. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, that's part of the problem, and we won't know until we get closer to the time. A lot of these things will begin to fall into place. Otherwise, what good is the prophecy?
Indeed.
You know, if nobody knows it, and if the word doesn't get out to those who need to know. My understanding is a little bit different than yours. I don't believe in a rapture as evangelicals conceive of it. It's all going to happen when Christ returns.
Right.
Dr. Martin has an article about the entire scenario and how he understood it. I wrote an article on conspiracy in Scripture. That's an interesting one that I would like to have you perhaps link. And it lays out. I mean, there were a lot of things going on with everybody. I mean, Paul, before he became the Apostle Paul, he was trying to kill the Christians.
He was genocidally murdering them.
You know, they were a little standoffish.
Yeah.
Gee, we can understand. If he would come up to me in a local, you know, ecclesia where there were only 25 people and asked to hold my coat, no, I would be a little nervous. Right.
Of course. You know?
Because we've heard about you. And then other Jews tried to kill him in Antioch. So it was bizarre. Then there's a lot going on. Dr. Martin wrote another book on how the Bible was set out. It's called Restoring the Original Bible. It's about the design and development of the Holy Scriptures. The original Hebrew order is correct. And Jesus even confirmed that. You know, the law, the prophets, and the writings. The law, the prophets, and the Psalms, which identify that third thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if most people don't even know that there are actually 49 books of Scripture from Genesis to Revelation. And there's 22 Hebrew books, and there's 27 New Testament books, they make 49. You say, well, there's 66. Well, you know, Chronicles was one scroll. Samuel was one scroll.
Yes.
Kings was one scroll.
Yes.
The Book of the 12 are one scroll. That's 12 and one right there.
Yep.
And by the way, there's a lot of intertextuality within the Book of the 12. Absolutely there is. And the latter ones, it goes from the time of the early divided kingdom until the end of the kingdom. And the last book is today is Chronicles, Second Chronicles, And the last words in that book are, is Darius giving the command to go up to Jerusalem and rebuild the temple. Darius' command.
Yep.
And so the Jewish, you look in the Jewish Old Testament, stop by a synagogue sometime and you'll see it. Of course, it'll be in Hebrew.
Right.
Starts off with Genesis and ends with Chronicles. And the last words are, let us go up from Babylon to Israel and rebuild the temple. And that's exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And then Christ comes, and then you have the New Testament. The New Testament Pentateuch is the four Gospels and Acts. And then you have the Catholic epistles, starting with James. And you're reading the book in the right order, for goodness sake. This is the way God wanted you to read the Old Testament, and you should do all, 90% of all the Greek manuscripts have the Catholic epistles in front of the Pauline epistles. And of course, you have the Pauline epistles, the church epistles, and then the individual epistles. There are no books combined, and then Revelation is at the end. Revelation is postgraduate school.
Yeah.
So the world isn't there yet, and we're, you know, so that's how this stuff is all aligned. The New Testament manuscripts are in a certain order, whether they're partial or, and Hebrews smack in the middle of the Pauline epistles. You know, there's a big discussion who wrote Hebrews.
Right.
Very interesting. So, Jacob, you know your stuff.
I appreciate that. I do. I that's actually kind of why I got into conspiracies in the first place.
The comments you're making.
Right. I what I do mostly is look at conspiracies, but then I also look at end time prophecies. And when you see how many things are lined up neck and neck, that is also why it's really hard to refute the Bible. I know some of our listeners are not Christian. That's fine. You are free to make your own choice. I have my opinion. You are your freedom to have your own choice. But when you look at historically, scientifically, mathematically, and prophetically what all has come to pass and what all has been checked out to be true, it's really hard to refute the evidence that's in front of your face. And the Bible also tells us to be watchmen for the end times. And it's very hard to be a watchman for the end times without being very awake to the conspiracies that are playing out in front of you.
And into the Word of God.
Right.
When you read Jane Austen, any book, Pride and Prejudice, and then you read Tolstoy, War and Peace, you're reading the thoughts of the author.
Right.
Right? At that time, from the past to you at your present while you're reading those words. Exactly. This is what the Word of God is too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have a lot of context in the scriptures, but you're reading the Word of God, what he wants you to learn in that context, whether it's Genesis and, to Revelation.
Right.
And not only that, but in every story, you have a story arc. It starts at Genesis, it ends at Chronicles. It starts at Genesis, it ends at Revelation, depending on how you want to look at it. I mean, in the New Testament times, when the New Testament was written, they had Genesis to Chronicles.
Right.
But if you put them all together, who's the focus of that? Of those 49 books, as I have mentioned, of 49 writings, the New Testament writings, a lot of them are just like Jude. They're just letters. They're not books. Of those 49 writings, center five are the Gospels and Acts, together as a Pentateuch. The book of Acts is just the acts of God through the disciples, not through Christ, or the acts of Christ through the disciples.
Which
you can look at it that way too. Now right. You can maybe see I'm stretching it, but
sure.
It makes a lot of sense. There is a complete story arc, and Christ is, as I understand it, is at the center and at the crisis of the story. And this whole thing plays out with the temple also.
Yep.
That's why the temple is so important. A little known, there's a connection between the temple and the plan of God's creation. Okay. You start out Holy of Holies in God's presence in Genesis. He gets kicked out of there. Where do Now, what's little realized, in Revelation, it talks about paradise and the presence of God. That's the Holy of Holies, of course. Now, you don't get this going through, but Moses was given the plan, a tabnit, the pattern of the tabernacle. And he was given the law, the Torah, in writing.
Right.
King David was given the tabnit of the temple in writing, it says, in 2 Samuel. That pattern is the same word. It's the same word, and David received it in writing. We don't know whether he got a schematic, a drawing,
right,
or we don't know if he got details, because there were so many details God had to have it written for him. And it says several places written with God's own hand. So there's something, and then we come back to the nature of writing. Writing is meant to be spoken, the scriptures. Now, that's not going to, you and I learned it by reading silently. Until the 3rd century AD, if you read by yourself, you were considered silently. If you read silently, you were considered mentally ill.
Right.
People looked at you, well, there's a strange duck, you know. Yeah. So people, even reading to themselves, read out loud. It's amazing how good that makes you as a reader. You should always teach your children to read and read aloud to others. I went to a Bible study for a couple of years with a Jewish rabbi. He was rabbi by name only, but he was very knowledgeable. And we would go around and read out loud. I hadn't done a lot of that. But 3 years later, then the guy moves to Israel and he dies a couple of years before I saw him once and over there, and then he died on me. But you learn to read so well if you do this on a regular basis. You start using dialogue, you know, you can do dialogue and voices and all sorts of things. And it was interesting when we were doing that, because the ladies didn't like, well, all this blood and gore. We went through the entire Old Testament.
I'm going to say, the Bible's not exactly a feel-good vibe book start to finish. It has a lot of messed up things in it. It really does. But it's also real. Because life has a lot of messed up things that happen.
It's real life. And what happens at the Tophet in Jerusalem, the human sacrifice of children, it's going on now.
It is.
It's going on now. And there's more slaves in the world than there have ever been in the world.
Indeed.
It's just amazing. Yeah. I wrote an article on human sacrifice in Scripture. It's all over the place.
It is all over the place.
And a lot of it was done by Jews, but it was... Almost all the Gentiles did it.
Yeah.
Almost all of them. And it's coming back, and it's a common practice. That's how they hook the politicians. It's like just like the Godfather. I heard somebody the other day say, just like the Godfather, the horse in the horse head in the bed, or the dead hooker, the dead prostitute, you know, and they photographed everything.
Yep.
Well, this goes on.
It does indeed.
When I was at Fuller Seminary in Pasadena, I spoke with the chaplain of the McMartin preschool, the police department where the McMartin preschool was. And he said the line police were scared to death because nobody's telling what we found and what we saw. They did find tunnels at the McMartin preschool.
Yep.
And the stuff that kids went through and the stories they told, I could tell you stories of some of the mothers on how they came to really understand.
Right.
One woman said that she was beginning to not believe her son until she saw Michael Aquino, who has since died, on TV. And the kid was catatonic, pointing at, and he was yelling and screaming. She comes out of the kitchen, and he says, "That's bad Mikey. That's bad Mikey." She's never seen him before, but her kid knew who he was.
Right.
And he was 3 or 4 at the time. And she said, I felt this small because I didn't believe my own child.
Right.
My goodness.
But see, that's why we have this show. We have this show to spread the word and get the truth out there to the world. And David, we are going to have to wrap this one up, man.
Okay.
We would love to have you back on, though. Definitely. I would love to dive into more prophetic words with you, tie more into modern-day conspiracy. Would you be interested in coming back on?
Sure, be happy to.
Awesome. Yeah.
That'd be great. I'm actually, it wasn't until recently that I started really getting into the Bible and really understanding that, the whole way of Christianity. I wasn't raised that way. My parents, the only time we would ever really pray is Thanksgiving and Christmas. We never went to church or anything like that. So I kind of had to find my way to this whole thing. And, I said in the last episode and maybe the episode before that it's getting to that time where it couldn't be more obvious that all this stuff is so true and it's so real. So, I said in the last episode, it took me seeing the devil to really believe. You know what I mean? And I feel like the devil's really in the details with all this stuff.
Indeed.
But
anyway, we're gonna have to wrap this one up.
Yeah, David, thank you so much for coming on, man. Feel free if you want to let people know where they can find your books, and then we'll write it down and put it in the link below so that they can actually click on it. What are the links to the books that you've read and the books that you've written also?
Well, I haven't written books. I write articles and update the writings of Dr. Martin. We have over 400 articles, and he's written 9 books. Wow. And it's askelm.com. Ask Elm.
Ask Elm.
Ask Elm.com.
Excellent.
And it'll spread out for you and whole list of topics. So people get in there and they say, I can't believe how much stuff is on there.
Oh, it's
mostly
insane.
By one man and me. So
I believe it.
Dr. Martin started in the early 60s. He got his doctorate from not an accredited school, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because it's his life production. His life production.
Right.
He's written a book on the Star of Bethlehem. That was his first one. Place of the Crucifixion. Creation of the Bible. That was his, not creation, but design and development of the scriptures. That was his dissertation, expanded with multiple things. Then he wrote the book on the true location of the temple. The Temple Mount today is actually Fortress Antonia. It's not the temple. The temple was above the Gihon. You need living water. Living water in the temple.
People think the
and
temple,
that
yes.
living water. Last time I was there in 2019, I asked the guide, how did they get the water to the temple on the Day of Atonement? And she said, oh, they have the girls carry buckets up there. Yeah, on a high day, they're going to make little girls work? I don't think so. No. And I don't see that anywhere in the Mishnah or Talmuds.
Right.
So somebody made that up.
Right. Right.
Because now what do you have at the Gihon Spring? You have a karst spring under pressure. It's like Old Faithful without the heat. And it pumps the water 40 stories to the top. That was the value of the city of David. The temple was in the city of David.
Mm-hmm.
And that structure up there now is the remains of Fortress Antonia. It looks like a fortress. But that's the story for another day.
Indeed.
It sounds like you can go on and on all day just like we do. So we feel where you're coming from.
Don't tempt me.
I love it. I mean, you're definitely teaching me a lot of new things. I mean, Jacob, it seems like he knows what you're talking about. I'm trying to learn it all. So I really appreciate the knowledge that you're spreading
You're doing good.
Thank you. I really appreciate the knowledge that you're spreading to us and to our listeners. I'm sure they're going to be very interested in hearing
Absolutely.
Everything that you got to say, and I'm sure they're going to be very intrigued by your comeback to the show whenever we do have you back. So thank you very much, Mr. David Seeloff, right?
Correct.
All right. Well, that was another beautiful episode.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Oh, thank you, sir. I mean, this was an absolute honor having
awesome.
You on.
Absolutely.
We've worked out the bugs and everything.
We figured it out. Well, thank you so much. This was another episode of The Cults of Conspiracy. My name's Jonathan.
I'm Jacob.
This was David, and we always want to remember one very important, extremely vital piece of information. Please, open up that third eye.